ॐ भद्रं कर्णे विश्वयामदेवाः भद्रं पश्येमाक्षभिर्यजत्राः स्थिरैरङ्गैस्तुष्टुवागुंसस्तु नूभिः यशेम देवहितं यदायुः स्वस्ति न इन्द्रो वृद्धश्रवाः स्वस्ति न पूषा विश्ववेदाः स्वस्ति नस्तार्क्ष्यो अरिष्टमेनिः स्वस्ति नो बृहस्पतिर्दधातु ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः.
Let's, we'll chant 12 and 13. I'll break the Sunday again, and then I'm just going to give a synopsis of what these two verses say, and then we'll go on. Verse 12.
Karanad yad ananyatvam. Karanad yad ananyatvam. Atak karyam ajamyadi. Atak karyam ajamyadi. Jayamanat divai karyat, karanante katam dhruvam, ajad vai jayate yasya, drishtantastasya nasti vai, jata cha jayamanasya, navyavastha prasajyate.
Karanat yadi ananyatvam ataha karyam ajam yadi jayamanat di. Jayamanat hi vai karyat karanam te katam dhruvam. Ajat vai jayate yasya drishtantaha tasya na asti vai. Jata cha jayamanasya na vivasta prasajyate.
This is these two, as I said last week, really have to do with the Sankhya position of Prakriti being the beginningless cause, the beginningless upadana karana, the beginningless material cause of the creation. And there's some problems with that whole idea. So here's these two verses again are going into, we're kind of winding up this particular set. So what this verse is saying, after having done a couple of other verses that were right in line with this, he says, karanat yadi ananyatvam. He says, if there is ananyatvam, no difference, non-difference of the effect is understood, karyasya ananyatvam understood. If there's no difference, anya means other, ananya means no other. Ananyatvam means the state of there being no difference or separation or otherness between the cause, the karya, and the effect. So if you say that the cause, this is actually called Satkaryavada. Satkaryavada, this particular logic, means that an effect, the effect or the product, is there existing in the material cause, right? So what the effect actually exists in the material cause itself. And so now if you say that, you can say, well, the effect is there, that when the material, the effect itself is one with, so you're going to be saying, in a sense, the effect is one with the material cause. And so that's the position of the Prakriti. This whole manifestation of the creation is nothing but the Prakriti. The Prakriti comes in the manifestation, the Prakriti goes into unmanifest condition. And so in that sense, then you're saying that there is no difference between the effect
and the cause, because it's the same one property. Right? So he says, if you're going to say that, that there's no difference between the effect and the cause, and you say that the prakriti of the Sankhya is ajam, it's beginningless, it has no first birth, so it itself is beginningless, so then if you're going to say that there's no difference between the two, then you also have to say that the effect is beginningless. So he says, Attaha, therefore, if you say that, then the effect is going to be beginningless. So both are beginningless. And then if you say that, then we have to look at it the other way also. And he says, Jayamanat hi karyat karanam te katam dhruvam. But you're going to have to say, because it's going to work both ways. If you say that the cause is beginningless and therefore the effect is beginningless, okay, you can say that. But if you say that, the two, and you're saying that the effect of prakriti is born, which they also say, then you have to say that the cause is born, right? Mm-hmm. Because there's an anyatvam between the two. And so he says, if you're going to say that, then, because if both, you're going to say one, then you have to say the other, because the anyatvam, that non-difference is there, then that's going to lead to the karanam, the cause itself, not being dhruvam. Dhruvam means nityam. It's something which has got to an effect, as we'll see as the argument goes. An effect for it to be dhruvam, it has to be steady, it has to be changeless. Otherwise, it itself is born and has a prior condition. And that will go on, as you'll say later, into an infinite regress. Right? And so this is the problem that we have when we're dealing with duality. So that's what he brings up here. But let's do this next verse and we'll talk a little bit more about it. So then he goes on to say, so if you say, ajat vai jayate, yasya drishtanta hastasya na astivai, he says, for a person who says that from something ajat, from something that has never been born, it's aja, from something that, from a cause that has never been born, something is born, the effect is born. It says, from something that's never been born, by its nature, something is born. So, for a person who says that, for that person, tasya, there is no drishtanta whatsoever. This is a big problem. Drishtanta means you have no example in the world that will go along with that. And even though, a lot of this is a little on the technical side, the Sankhya Yoga, their philosophy, they consider themselves to be Astikas. Astikas means they accept the Vedas and the Upanishads as a pramana, as a means of knowledge, as an authority. So they, just as the Advaita Vedanta does, as the Mimamsa. So the Advaita Vedanta for the second half of the Vedas, the Upanishads, and the Mimamsa for the first half of the Vedas, all of the rituals, they give pramanatvam to the Vedas. Sankhya Yoga also gives pramanatvam, that state of being a pramana, authority, to the Vedas. But they say that with their philosophical position, even though they say it's in line with what the Vedas say, we can establish it through nyaya, through logic. Nyaya is also one of the darshanas. So through anumana, the means of knowledge is called anumana. Anumana is logic. So we can logically establish this. That's their purpose, that's what they put forward. But now if you say, we can logically establish this, that means you have to be able to put this into a logical syllogism. If you have a logical syllogism, part of the logical syllogism has to do with what we call a drishtanta, an illustration. It's like an illustration, it's an example. The example that is used in a logical syllogism, shows what we call the invariable relationship, you know, that allows an inference to take place. It's called concomitance. There's an invariable concomitance. So let me give you an example. If in a logical syllogism, the one that we obviously use all of the time, just as a stock example, is I see smoke on the hill, therefore there is fire. For me to be able to say that, I have to be able to posit an invariable relationship between smoke and fire. What if I have no example in the world of an invariable relationship between smoke and fire? Then I can't see the smoke and say there's fire, because I have no drishtanta anywhere in the world that would back me up on that. So I'm just making it up out of my head. There's nothing in the world, there's no drishtanta that will collaborate with that. Right? And so in a logical syllogism, in Indian nyaya, inference, that drishtanta is very important, because you need an example of the invariable relationship between the two things that are caused, but the two things that are allowing you to make that inference. If I see the one, the other has to be there. That's the concomitance. I have to have that. I need drishtantas to establish that. So now what he's saying, so you're basing, as a Sankhya, you're basing everything on this anumana, on this inference, and yet it's impossible for you to come up with a drishtanta, an illustration that will show that invariable relationship between a thing that has never been born and a thing that is being born. In fact, it doesn't exist. We always see that something, what we actually see, and we'll get into this in a little bit. Well, let's do the next line, and then it'll show. He says, so you have no drishtanta for that. So what you actually have a drishtanta for is this. Jata cha jayamanasya. You have an illustration. You can have all kinds of drishtantas for something which is being born from something which itself has been born, right? So we see this over and over and over again. Like we'll get into the next verse. Like for instance, a father son, right? The father, the son, has been born from the father, right? Who was the son, right? To his father. So chicken and egg also. But this chicken and egg is one they also use, you know. We get into this, what we call an infinite regress, you know. We have drishtanta for it, but the drishtanta never, it doesn't resolve the problem into anything that we would call ajam, anything that itself simply is and has not been born. So we're caught into this cycle. So this is what he says. If you say there's no drishtanta at all for something that has been born, coming from something that has never been born, right, you're in that predicament, then you have to say, okay, there's something, but something that's being born is from something that is itself born. We'll say, yes, exactly. We all say that too. But no vivasta prasajate, but this doesn't lead to any resolution. It doesn't solve any kind of problem. All it does is give you, Shankara says, in his little bhasha, it just gives you anavastanam. Anavastanam means infinite regress. There's no landing place, right? And then Swamiji, when he's talking about this, and this is exactly what we say in Vedanta, in this world of duality, right, there is no, you can never come to an end. You can never come to an end, like you can never come to a first cause. You know? Now, if we say you can never come to a first cause in this cause-effect relationship, you know, then if you say that, which is true, and we accept it completely, then we would have to go into another level where then Brahman itself is not a first cause. And in fact, from the standpoint of Brahman, of yourself, there is no cause-effect relationship at all. There's only a satya-mitya relationship. Cause-effect relationship doesn't exist in any way. In fact, there is no creation other than Advaita. There is no creation other than that has any reality. It's all mitya. It has no reality other than Brahman, other than non-dual Brahman. So in fact, there has never been a creation. Because you get something that goes into an infinite regress is beginningless. So where is the creation? So we say, yes, this beginningless creation that you call prakriti, we call maya. Maya, and it's the same. Sattva, rajas, and tamas, sankhya, you call it prakriti, we say it's maya. Ya, ma, iti, maya. That which has no being of its own, that is maya. Right? Mitya, maya is mitya. And so, in fact, there is no creation. Brahman is not a karana. It is not a cause to this effect, right? Because nothing has happened, right? When we're dealing with mithya, nothing has happened because mithya has no being. It's like we never would say, the rope is, and the snake has been born on the rope. You know, the snake has not been born on the rope. There is no snake. But we experience a snake, so we call it mithya. So we'd say this snake is maya. Yama iti maya. Ya means that which. Ma is not. Yama. That which is not, that is maya. Means it has no being of its own at all. And yet we experience it. Because we experience it, we call it mithya. Right? Mithya means here, because we can't say, so mithya is really important to understand. We can't say that we're not experiencing this creation. We can't say this is all non-existent as though there's no experience here. We are experiencing it. Upon analysis, it has no being. The being it's joined, the being that it enjoys is what we call the adhishtana. It's that which allows the maya to be. The rope is the adhishtana. The rope is the being, not the snake. The snake's being is only the rope. So this has no being of its own, but it is nothing but being. But the being that it is Brahman. But Brahman has not done anything to become this. That's why we say Brahman is the material cause of this creation. Upadana karana. But we don't stop there. It's not the upadana karana. It's the vivarta upadana karana. Upadana karana means material cause. Vivarta upadana karana means the material cause that goes through no change to become the effect. That's vivarta. The Sankhya will say the prakriti is the parinama upadana karana, the material cause which itself goes through modification to become the effect. But then they say that that prakriti is itself beginningless, you know. But it's not beginningless because it is itself subject to this infinite regress, right? There is no birthlessness for prakriti. Prakriti itself is subject to this infinite regress. That just puts it into the category of maya, of mithya. So those are those two verses. Then, these two verses, in a sense, are negating the whole Sankhya position, getting rid of the drishtanta, you know, which leads back to what, again, the Upanishads say, which is satyam mithya. So if you once you knock off somebody's position, then their position doesn't hold water anymore, right, because their position has been, you know, denigrated, and then you're back to where you, what we call the Siddhanta is saying, which is that, yeah, there is no God, there is no cause and effect, it's only satya mithya relationship, like the rope snake. You have all kinds of drishtantas for it, you know. Clay pot is one kind of drishtanta, wave ocean is another kind, rope snake is another type of drishtanta, another type is the post ghost. You can see a man in distance, it's really only a post. Another one is the mirage water. It's, you know, another one is the gold and the seeing gold where there's really only a mother pearl shell. So they have all of these type of drishtantas where something is seen to be come from something else, right? But there is no relationship there. It's mithya, satyam mithya. Yeah. There is no cause effect relationship. Get it? Okay. In terms of upadana karana, in terms of material cause. Okay, so that gets us back to for the Mahatma, where the one who has self-knowledge, for that person, sarvam atma abhut, every abhut vai. What that means, this is just in the commentary, it's a quote from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad that says, for the one who knows everything, sarvam, all of this indeed is only Brahma, Advaita. So that being the dvaita abhava, that in reality, paramarthataha, in reality, dvaita abhavaha, the non-existence of a dvaita, abhava, right? The non-existence of advaita, of duality, is what is said by the Shruti. And so that being what we call the tatparya, what is actually the vision of the Shruti. The tatparya is what the Shruti actually says, what its essential truth is of the Shruti. He now gives, you're going into a little bit different, same thing, but it has a little bit different a context. Now we're going into the context of the transmigrating jiva. Okay? Because am I transmigrating? Yeah. Am I taking a body and then taking another, taking a body based upon my karmas? And then, but the body, having this body, is responsible for my punya and papa, but the punya and papa is responsible for my taking the body. Okay, so now we're bringing it back home just to me, you know. So this is the verse. These next two verses are three, but even more. But for now, just these two verses will do. So it goes.
Eto radipalam yesham.
Heto radhi palam yesham
adir hetu palasya cha
adir hetu palasya cha
heto palasya cha nadhi
heto palasya cha nadhi
katam tai rupa varnyate
katam tai rupa varnyate
heto ho adhi palam yesham adihi hetuhu palasya cha hetoho palasya cha anadihi katam taihi upavaranyate.
So here, pala means the effect, hetu means the cause.
Mm-hmm.
So pala, so it says hetoho adihi. The adi is the beginning or the origin. The origin of the cause, so hetoho, so this says, just a second, make sure I get this right. Yeah, this says, polam adihi. The effect has its origin in the cause. It comes from the cause. Okay? So the which is, we know that, the effect, of course. The effect comes from the cause. Okay, so Bensi says that. So for whom that's true, then there's also, so he says, adihi hetuhu palasya cha. And the cause has its origin in the effect. Right? So the effect comes from the cause, and the cause comes from the effect. So then he says, hetoho palasyacha anadihi. If there is anadi, beginningless now, and beginninglessness for the cause and for the effect, he says, how can they say that there is beginninglessness for the cause and for the effect? You see the problem? So upavarnyate means that this is what they're stating, these people who are taking this position. How can they state, katam upavarnyate, how can it be stated by them, what? That both the cause and the effect are beginningless. It's not possible to state that. Why? Because if you say that the effect has its beginning in the cause, then you have to also say the cause has its beginning and the effect. What's the example of that? What they find is that, what we find in any analysis of cause and effect, is that the effect, that the cause also is the effect. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And that the effect also is the cause.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so now you say that one or the other or both are beginningless. But they're only beginningless in the sense of infinite regress, you know, where the cause goes on infinitely, itself being an effect and then becoming a cause, or the effect goes on infinitely being an effect, which then becomes a cause. It goes with infinite regress. There is no such thing as being free of birth, anadi in that self, in a sense, like this cause is anadi. This cause is beginningless, you know, or this effect is beginningless. There is no beginningless effect. There is cause effect is serial. It's a serial, right? And so the problem with that is that there is no going to be first cause. In a serial cause-effect relationship, where is the first cause? Who's going to say, you know, stop, when that thing itself, by its very nature, has to come from a cause? And so the example they use, we're going to do this next verse too, because the two go together. You're going to use the father-son example for this. So let's look at this next verse, and then I'll pull these two together. Heto radipalam yesham, heto radipalam yesham, adir hetu palasyacha,
adir hetu palasyacha,
tatajan mapavetesham,
tatajan mapavetesham,
putrajan mapiturita, putrajan mapiturita. So that etoho adihi palam yesham adihi hetuhu palasyacha tata janma bhavetesham putra janma pituryata. So he's going to take it to the punyapata here. So he gives this example. He says first, he repeats, he says, for whom the fruit has its origin in the cause, heto comes from the cause, has its beginning in the cause, heto ho adihi palam yesham. And the cause has its adi, has its origin in the effect of that person. It's just like, in the second half of the next one, putra janma pituhu yata, he says, it's just as the birth, janma pituhu, the birth of the father is from the son. Putra, from the son, there's the birth of the father. Mm-hmm. Right? Similarly, this tata, similarly, this janma, their janma. See, this is the problem. Well, how did I take this birth, me, this Atma? I've now taken this birth. What is the cause of my, what is my prior condition, the cause of my taking this particular birth? We would say it's my karmas are causing me to take this birth. Karmas are what? Punyapapa. Punyapapa comes from what? Well, the karmas caused me to take this birth, but where did I get those karmas? I got those karmas from my previous birth. Right? And in that previous birth, I did karmas. And those karmas gave the punya and papa, which went into my sanchitta file, which caused me to take this birth. Where I got more karmas, it's going to sanchitta file, at the moment of my death, caused me to take this birth. So I go back into an infinite regress in the same way. It's serial. It's a serial thing. It's not like saying, so he gives the example of the father's son. If I say that this father was born from the son. It's not the son of that father. You see what I mean? I would only say, you know, this is his father, this is the son, you know, this is the father, this is the son, this is the father. I would never call that son the father of that father. That son will only be the father of the next son. You see what I mean? So it's a serial that goes on to an infinite regress, keeping you contained within the creation. You can't get out of the creation, and you can't have a first. There can't be a first. It's all chicken and egg. All of this becomes chicken and egg because what causes, what would be the first body, to try to imagine the first body, what was the cause of the first body? Well, your prior karmas. Your prior karmas, but that's not the first body then. There is no first body. Right? And nor is there a first cause, because those prior karmas were caused by, took place when you were embodied. And so we have this chicken and egg situation, you know. And so that's why he uses this putrat jenma pituhu. The birth of the birth of the father is from the son. But it's not from the son of that father. So it goes on into an infinite regress that you can't get out of. That's the idea. You can't get out of it. And so what happens with this is the whole idea of cause and effect within duality will never lead to a first cause. There's no such thing. It goes into an infinite regress. You can't have a first cause within duality. It's or you can have something be born from something which was born, and there's many drishtantas for that. But you have no drishtanta for something being born from something that was never born. That would be like a first cause within duality. You can say that, but you have no example of it. And so the fact that you have no example of it, you're just saying it out of your mind. You're making it up. You know? Or we totally accept that you can't say that because there's no drishtanta for it, and that you can say one thing is born from another, it's born from another, it goes into infinite regress. That's why it's maya. That's why also you could never say that this creation, which is born, comes from Brahman, as though Brahman is changing into becoming this creation, because then Brahman would go into, and the creation would go into an infinite regress. And so this whole creation, in terms of its order of reality, is what we call maya. You know? Then when we break down the creation, it means maya from many, many different angles. It's mitya from many different angles. But now it's just showing by this logic, the logic that is holding the Sankhya together, is showing that by the very logic, the Anumana, that holds the Sankhya together, they cannot establish Prakriti as the cause of this creation. Because the Prakriti itself is continually changing. So it itself has to have a cause. It's not that Prakriti is changeless or stable. It's not. It's in continual motion. Even in unmanifest condition, they say the Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas are rotating and changing within themselves. So when it comes to it, when the creation comes into manifestation, the Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas are mixing together. Mm-hmm. But they're never still. Mm-hmm. So they're never still. Then what is it that's actually there? There's always a prior condition. It's never not a prior condition. Even if the creation comes from it and goes back into it, it's that creation, the Prakriti has now become this, and now this is going back into that. Right. You see what I mean? So that's what they're doing. It's going to go on for a while. So we'll stop right there. A few more verses on this.
Swasti prajapyah padipalayantam nyayena margena mahim mahishah ko brahmane pyashubhamastrityam loka samasta sukhino bhavantu kale varshati parajanyah prithivi sasya shalini desho yam chova rahitah Brahmana santu nirbhayaha Om sarve bhavantu sukhinaha Sarve santu niramayaha Sarve bhadrani pashyantu Ma kaschik dukkha bhag bhavet Asato ma sadganaya tamaso ma jyotir gamaya, mrityor ma amritam gamaya, om purnamadah purnamidam purnat purnamudachyate, purnasya purnamadaya purnameva vasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om.
Purusha is also out of the Sankhya. Is that, that term is not used in Vedanta very much?
What?
Purusha.
Purusha is used in Vedanta, but the meaning is different.
It's a meaning.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Purusha in the Sankhya is something that's very much the same, something very different. The Purusha in the Sankhya, there are many Purushas. Each Purusha is infinite conscious being, but there are many of them. That is a logical problem for that. It's weak.
Okay.
But for the Vedanta, the Purusha, like in Purusha Suktam, Purusha actually means person. But the person, who is the, in Purusha Suktam, the person is Ishwara. But they mean the conscious being is the Purusha. Yeah. Same with Prakriti. We use the word Prakriti. But when Vedanta uses the word Prakriti, it's Maya. When Sankhya uses the word Prakriti, it's a real, existent material made of sattva, rajas, and tamas that is a different material than the infinite number of Purushas.
And then, do they speak about Brahman?
Mm-hmm.
They don't.
No, but each Purusha is like Brahman, but they have many of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a clear-cut duality.
Clear-cut, absolute
yeah.
duality.
Yeah.
The Prakriti has many parts, and from the Purusha side, there are many Purushas.
Mm.
It's Dvaita.
But they say that Purusha Prakriti comes out of Mahat.
Mahat, when you're doing the a type of Panchikaruna, Mahat is like the infinite Buddhi.
Okay.
It's all like Hiranyagarbha, but a little different.
You also said, maybe I missed this, but in the unmanifest condition,
yeah,
there's still Rajas, Tamas, and Sakya.
Yeah, it's in called a Samya Avastha, a state where everything is samya, everything is in has sameness, but there's still activity, even though there's nothing manifest. There's still activity. It's hard to even visualize what that is, but
yeah.
Rajas is moving within rajas. Rajas is affecting rajas. Tamas is affecting tamas. Sattva is affecting sattva, but that samya means it's a state of sameness. There's no manifestation.
So is that considered changeless, or is that considered changing?
Birthless.
Huh?
They say it's birthless, free of birth. But the very fact that it's changing and that it's the karana becomes the karya, the cause becomes the effect, then that becomes this chicken and egg cycle. Because now the effect now becomes the cause. Right? It's like father, son, father, son, father, son.
Yeah, but I think what I'm really asking is, what's the connection between Brahman and this unmanifest condition?
Well, there is no Brahman for Sankhya. That's the whole problem, is Sankhya looks at Prakriti as being a real and being beginningless.
So Vedanta doesn't say that in the unmanifest condition that this
sattva rajas tamas
is... Well, what's its status at that time?
The whole thing, for Vedanta, the whole thing is mithya. Ajnanam itself is mithya. There is only one Satchitananda, Brahman. And anything else is mithya. Ajnanam itself is
okay.
Mithya.
Okay.
Yeah. And that would be the karana sharira, the causal body for any type of manifestation.
Yeah, okay.
It's not like Ajnanam. That would be kind of what the Prakriti is. They would say the Prakriti is real, and the creation that comes from it, they always have, the creation that comes from it is also real. But for us, the causal body is as mithya as the rest of it.
Yeah.
Because cause and effect relationship.
And so that includes the unconscious.
Everything. Everything except Brahman.
Yeah.
Otherwise, there's no, if there's Brahman and something else, then there's dvaita. There's nothing else but Brahman. That this has no being. It's kind of what I was trying to play with today in the meditation.
Yeah.
Is to notice just in terms, because really your only experience is the experience of your mind. So that's fine. We negate the creation that's external, the external reality to your body, that we negate through some other logic. But in terms of your experience of this external reality and internal reality, that experience is only through vritti, whether it be an emotion or a perception or imagination. So you have two things going on here.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of your experience, you have the Atma, yourself, and the vritti.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have to, even your experience of the body is through the vritti, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now you have to look at, okay, in this experience between me and the vritti, conscious being and the vritti, right? Just, I want you to just sit there noticing what type, what has substance, where is the substance? Because you'll see the substance is just is conscious being. It never changes, it never goes, it doesn't come into being or go out of being. And all of the vrittis, all of them, of all the different types of vrittis, they have no being. The being always remains steady. And they enjoy that steady being, that changeless being, when they're there. Right? But they don't have any separate being. And you can actually recognize this. And that's why I don't often use the word ephemeral, because then it's kind of woo-woo. So this world is ephemeral. That's not what I was aiming at. When you experience the any given moment, there is what is non-objectifiable, changeless being is what is actually there. And there's no experience at all that's apart from that. And there's no experience that adds to that either. It doesn't bring in its own being. The being is the constant, you know? And so that gives, when you recognize that, it gives kind of an ephemeral maya, mitya nature to all of your experiences. We're so engaged out here, you don't necessarily see that. But if you just stop for a minute, you know, and just kind of go inside and just be with your experiences, you'll start to notice the mityatva of all of your experience, that there's nothing really there.
So my being has nothing to do with the creation, it has nothing to do with these experiences, that's only misidentifying myself, is that what's happening?
Yeah, but you have to recognize that when you say it has nothing to do with it, it has everything to do with it, because it is what is actually itself. But it itself isn't, yourself being isn't changed or modified by these experiences, but there's no experiences that could ever happen without you.
Mm-hmm.
You are the self of them all, but you yourself aren't touched by any of them. Yeah.
Is this what you were referring to? At one point you were saying it was like the transition into verse 14. There's no, in Vedanta, there's no cause-effect relationship, because
there's within maya, but not...
Within maya, but not between Brahman
yes,
and maya.
None, zero.
Okay.
As though Brahman... You can say, well, I said like this, Brahman is the material cause of the whole creation, but it's vivarta. It goes through no modification or no change to become the material cause, but because of Advaita, there's nothing else there. The only thing which this creation is enjoying in terms of substance is conscious being.
And when you use the word cause, it's not so much in the sense that it creates it, it's more that
there's two
maya
types.
Is dependent on it, that they never, that there, you never have maya or vritti of any kind where Brahman isn't there.
Right. That's right.
And is there
never, there's never any place anywhere at any time where Brahman isn't there, because Brahman is the only thing that actually is.
Is there any illustration for this
clay pot, rope snake?
Without undergoing any, without undergoing any change, a creation takes place.
Yeah, it's the same dream, your imagination, your daydream, your seeing a snake on a rope. Also, if we get just into what we call the upadana karana, the material cause, it's like the clay pot or the all the bangles made of gold or the wave ocean.
I understand it seems important to me, cause-effect seems very important for in the like logical argument of Vedanta against other like philosophical systems. But I feel kind of confused about why the commentary spends so much time on it in the Mandukya. I don't really see the relationship between the actual like Veda. I don't know, I'm like struggling to find it.
Because you see, in a Karika, like what this is not an Upanishad. What we're doing now is Gaudapada's Karika.
Right.
And so what he is doing is in light in this fourth chapter, he's looking at all of the other positions of different darshanas. Right now it's Vaisheshika and the Samkhya. And he is negating their positions. And that's part of the, that's really part of the whole teaching tradition, that when we say Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasana, what Shravana is the unfoldment itself. And there's all kinds of logic and things that are used to establish what the vision and the prakriyas, they're making you see what the vision of the Upanishad is. That's Shravana. Manana gets rid of your thinking, yeah, but it could be like that. Could be like that. Could be like what the Sankhya say. No. So it will go painstakingly with all logic from all different, coming in from all different sides to show that what they're saying is fallacious. Because actually, you can say what Sankhya is saying are fallacious. That's not really the point. The point is, if that Sankhya argument is your argument, coming in your own mind, you know, then that has to be negated because you have to, because you yourself could say, yeah, but it could be like this, couldn't it? And then you have to, then the Upanishad will say, well, actually, no, it cannot be like that. And so Gaudapada is very methodically going through this negation of any other possibility.
But does this particular subject of cause-effect have a particular relationship to the dreamer and the dream and everything that is like talked about in the actual? Like,
yeah, it does. It does. Because yourself is not something that's subject to cause and effect. Yourself has never been born. So it's not subject to time. So for you, there is no cause and effect. You're changeless. You haven't become this body. You know, you've always been exactly the same. That's why there can be such a thing as liberation. Otherwise, you can't get rid of beginningless cause and effect and all of the effects you've accrued from beginningless lifetimes. How are you going to work all that out? It's not possible. Really? It's not possible. So all of these things, you have to recognize that you yourself is free, always has been free, that there is no karma for you, there's no effects of karma, nothing. That level of cause-effect, karma, you know, karma, punya-papa, that all has its reality within duality, but not for you, not for the truth of your being. And in fact, even in reference to this creation also is not an effect of Brahman. There's no Brahman that's not becoming this creation, because that's also, because if you're Brahman, then you're also not really free, because now you're going to have to become this creation again. What happens, this was in previous chapters of Mandukya, what's going to happen, you know, to you if as Brahman you're going to be born, continually born, because Brahman is continually born. But Brahman is never born. And the dream is a good drishtanta, actually. Nothing happens to you when you have a dream. You know, there's a lot going on in the dream, you know, but the dream isn't touching you. That's why they use examples when you wake up from the dream. You may have had a big meal in the dream, but you wake up hungry and all these type of things. So you,
in the dream, you were in India. You know, but when you wake up, you're here, but you didn't have time to get here. You know, like, you have to see your freedom within this duality, and then to understand that this duality really has no being at all, apart from yourself.
Just want to make sure. So the drishtantas for this rope snake, wave ocean, post ghost.
They're two different types. Like,
okay.
There's a set of drishtantas that show really that the material cause is not changed by the effect. Clay pot, for instance. Wave ocean. These are all the kind of bangle, gold bangle, clay pot, wave ocean. They show that nothing happens to the material cause in relationship to the effect. And in fact, the effect, the nama rupa, is really nothing. It has no being apart from the cause, like the clay pot. So we always use clay pot because it works so well. But the clay pot, there is no pot really. There's really only clay in terms of what is actually there. And yet the pot is useful, right? But in terms of it being a second thing apart from clay, you say, no, really, what is actually there is clay. But the clay now is in the form of the pot, but really, there's only clay there. So that's one, that one. Then there's the other type, like a rope snake, which is showing more of the mityatva, or the magic. Like the rope never becomes the snake. So it's another pushing on something else there. The rope never becomes the snake. Right? And yet the only thing that is there, you experience the snake, but the only thing there is rope. And the bends of the rope, the length of the rope, the diameter of the rope is what the snake is, right? So really there is no snake at all, there's only rope, but you're experiencing the snake. Same with mirage water, same type of thing. Mistaking a man, a post for a man, that's another one. Experiencing a mother of pearl shell as gold or silver in the distance on the sea. So those are just examples to show this non-relationship, the satya-mitya relationship.
You know, I guess maybe it was during the meditation or maybe it was after that you were talking about being in the room with Swamiji and how the mind seems to resolve its obstructions or obstacles in his presence. Could you go a little more into that?
Well, I wasn't talking about that as some sort of a rule. It's just a kind of common experience for people.
Yeah.
Another experience is that you can be crying your eyes out too. Yeah. There's other kinds of experience, but because of his the strength of his shanti and love affects you, right?
Yeah.
It affects you. It makes your mind quiet. And so often when you think of Swamiji, when Swamiji's not here, he's not here right now. He's not in this room.
Yeah.
But if you think of him, it brings about that relationship, which gives you a type of shanti, you know, that makes you think of him, but what really, the one that you're thinking of is your own being.
Yeah.
It just brings the mind to a level of relaxation that you may not enjoy on your own. And so therefore, when you think of him or you contemplate on him as your guru or something, because you know him and have that relationship, then it brings a certain wholeness that he gives you from the outside.
Yeah, because he is in that state, in a
sense. And it affects you, but we affect each other all of the time. It's just Swamiji, you know. Your presence affects everybody in this room. Each one of us affects everybody in this room. That's how it is. You know, but say somebody like Swamiji, whose mind is so resolved, so deeply resolved, and you have Shraddha in him, that also is important.
Yeah.
That brings a resolution in your mind, which then makes you feel so whole and full and closer to yourself. But all that really
really is that he's not doing anything. I mean, your vritti, the vritti is becoming more subtle, that's all. And so you feel more at home with yourself. So that's a really good meditation. Like, I think he said to Nala, you know, she asked him, you know, what should I remember or something, Swamiji?
What can
said,
I do?
Yeah, what can I do? Just think of my smile. Yeah, because Swamiji's smile is so beautiful, you know. It's so, it just is what it is. So if you think of his smile, then he's right there, because he's yourself. That is the truth of it. There's the this self is Swamiji, there's, you know, and it's Ishwara, and it's you, you know. That's the truth. But, like, if you're a bhakta to Ishwara by evoking Ishwara's grace, you can feel that presence. But the presence you're feeling is yourself, you know. Mm-hmm. And so with Swamiji as your teacher, when you think of him, then it invokes that kind of special relaxation in your mind, and, you know, your own presence shines in that more fully. So.
Because it reminded me of people that were around Ramana Maharishi, and they would talk about how this, they would go into this state of deep silence when they sat in the room with him.
Yeah.
So there's some.
I used to always feel that with Swamiji at the beginning. After a while, you kind of acclimatize to it. I used to feel like that. I remember, like, in the 70s, when I would be sitting in the satsang, my mind would be so overwhelmed by just the power of his presence, and probably also the all of the stuff in my own presence, mm-hmm. you know. It was just totally over. I could never talk. I mean, it would be impossible. And I never did talk for a long time. I just sat there, kind of. You know, I went on for, I'd say not years, but it went on for several months like that. Because of the strength of that presence. You're not used to that.
Yeah.
After a while, you've got to take it for granted. But usually not initially. It's very powerful. But it's just, his mind is quiet.
But in a way, it's just being around someone normal. You know what I mean?
Well, yes. We're all abnorms. On our way to normalcy.